Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
It's so good to hear that voice after not having heard it for the past couple of weeks. I can't believe we took this much time off from the show, but you know what? Everybody just needed to chill, and the last time that we had a guest was Brian O'Neill, and honest to goodness, I'm so grateful to God that Brian was our last guest before Christmas, because Brian has generated about 2,200 listens from that time, and that doesn't even take into consideration the live listens. So this really speaks well of 2013. And honestly, I can't think of a better guest to kick off this new show for all of the shows of the year than somebody who really embodies what I'm trying to go for with the whole title of this show. This is a man who really takes to heart one of the quotes from Charlie Parker. Charlie said, "Don't play the saxophone, let it play you." Ladies and gentlemen, please make welcome Mike MacArthur. Woohoo!
Hello, Trish. How are you?
I'm just better now. It's so nice to hear your voice. You do have a really nice speaking voice.
Well, thank you. Maybe I should talk more at my shows.
Yes, maybe you should. Mike, there is so much information about you, and I'm so tickled that Dre made the introductions to you and I. We had been friends on Facebook, but until I heard Feels Like Home, and a lot of folks haven't, because when is the CD going to drop?
February 26th is the release date. It'll be available on iTunes and CD Baby and Amazon and everything there. So I will have, at shows, I'll have pre-copies available, but the release date is February 26th.
That is wonderful. Well, here I am. I'm honored to have had one of the first copies, as it were. And this album is really mind-blowing. I hope you're ready for what 2013 is going to bring you.
I hope so.
Yeah. How did this come to be? Tell us about you. I know that you were on the road, just to give a little background for folks who are listening, and the chat room is piling up. I love this. You were on the road for a while with Maynard Ferguson and then Diane Shore. So take us from there and a little bit about how you got inspired when you were a young lad.
Well, one of my great friends, Carl Fisher, was a trumpet player who now currently plays with Billy Joel and Diana Ross, got me on Maynard Ferguson's band. And
wow.
That was a life-changing experience for a couple of reasons. One, you're playing with a living legend. I was very fortunate to be playing with Maynard at a young age and before he passed. So that
yeah.
was just, you just can't trade that in for anything. And through that band, you know, you grow as a musician. You're on the road, you're on a bus, you're in hotels, you're playing colleges, high schools, which I wasn't too far out of when I started playing them with Maynard. So it was very interesting to see, you know, what an impact I had on kids who were only a few years younger than myself in colleges. We did a lot of clinics with Maynard. So we did a lot of road work with him, became more of a player every day. And through Maynard's gigs, I met up with Diane Schur because he had done an album with her. And she came to Tampa, and I was hired for one of the gigs that she did here because I was here and it was convenient. And she asked me to go on the road with her as well after that happened, which was another beautiful thing, and became good friends with her and still talk to her today. And through that, you know, the travels and playing gigs and performing, you just meet a lot of different people. After leaving the road with Diane, I started my own thing, or basically continued my own thing, and had it in the back of my head that I was going to do in what I call a real CD. And what I mean by real is just being true to the music and what I am as a player, and having people and friends and everybody that's involved in the CD, people that I love to be with and hang out with, and do it the right way. Not that there is a wrong way, but in my eyes, just the way I had it envisioned.
Good for you. And it says a lot, too. I had noted when I was reading some background information on you, and you just reiterated that you make friends along the way. You really have, because we're going to get to this in a big way in talking about Feels Like Home. I love the title, by the way. But when you say that you have made friends, you have, because you've got some of the big brass and contemporary jazz on this CD, and I want to give folks a little taste of who else that Mike MacArthur has played with besides some of these jazz legends. You also have played with Frankie Valli, Rick Derringer, and Roger Waters. I want to get that out there, okay? I love that.
It is fun. I mean, that's one of the things that makes a musician a better musician, I think, is being able to play different styles of music and embracing it. You know, anybody can learn one specific genre of music and be really good at it. To me, the guys that are chameleons that can play a rock show or can play a blues show or can play a classical show even, which is not me, that makes you a better player. You know, one of the guys that I love his playing is Kirk Whalum. He's one of my favorite saxophone players.
Oh, yeah.
And when you see Kirk at a show, he's practicing classical etudes in the back practice rooms. And I think it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's every genre of music overlaps and gives you insight to something that you might not even know until you do it.
Isn't that something? And Kirk is certainly a favorite of mine. He's just so generous as far as when he plays and who he plays with. And
exactly.
He's totally about the spiritual experience of playing, knowing full well that people come to a show and they can be transformed depending on how you are on that stage. And I know that you feel that too, Mike.
Exactly. That's why I chose the players that I did for this album and guys that were very into making the music solid music from the heart. And I'm hoping that when everybody listens to it, they feel the same way I do, that it does feel like home. It felt like home in the studio. It felt like home when we walked into Brian's studio. It felt like home when we were having dinner and drinks between sessions. It felt like home when we were, you know, going out for dinner. It was just amazing, the entire process of it with everybody involved had the same heart and soul into it that I did.
And lest folks not be shocked when we casually mention the name Brian, you want to give us some feedback about who Brian is and who all is playing on this CD?
Well, Brian to me is he's one of my heroes, basically. I mean, he became a friend a while back when I did some playing for him, some horn section work for him, and he has worked and played and produced everybody under the sun. I mean, the list is too long to even start mentioning, but artists like Michael Bublé, Kenny G, Jeff Koshua, just the line goes on. And he became a good friend of mine, and through his contacts and my contacts and friendships, we were able to put a really, really good cast of characters on the CD, including a real good friend of mine, Jeff Golub, Jeff Lorber. We have
Rick Braun.
Rick Braun was one of my friends. He's actually been using me on dates in the Southeast, and we got to know each other through my keyboard player, Ron Reinhart, who was also a part of the glue that got everything together. And the drummer on the CD is Frank Third Richardson. We call him Third. And I actually hired Third in my band when he was 19 years old. And currently Third's working with everybody, including his main gig now is Richard Elliott. He's working on the cruise ships in the next couple weeks with Sanborn and Marcus Miller and Bob James and everybody. So it's when you sit back and look at a project like this, when you're so involved in it and you actually have a chance to sit back and look at it, it's pretty amazing to see, even for me, the names that are on here and how lucky I am to have it all come together.
And let us tell the folks in the chat room, and it's really wonderful that we have this feedback, and I'm going to address somebody who just asked me a question, and of course I can't type while I'm interviewing anybody, but Brian is Brian Bromberg, and I know that there's a collective what in the chat room at this point, but yes, it's really cool that Mike had this relationship with Brian before they started this project, and it just seems like, and I think that actually, Mike, when I was interviewing along with Joy Hall on Cool Jazz Conversations, the other show that I've done, Brian spent a lot of time with us, and he's all about the organic way that things happen. He doesn't like things to be forced. He likes there to be I hesitate to use the word smooth. He likes easy transitions,
right.
so that one particular event flows into another without any effort involved. Is that a correct assessment of Brian?
it's spot on. I mean, it comes from his, I mean, he's a perfectionist. He's really, really good at what he does. He's like, I've equated him to a pool player. You know, he can see 9-10 moves ahead, which is really hard to do, and it's an art form. He can take a look at, you know, you go into a studio with a bass player, a drummer, and a piano player, and a sax player, and that's just the beginning. And he can see what it's going to be after we put percussion on it, and after we add guitar tracks to it, and after we do this, and after we do that. And it's right down to where we were uploading the CD for manufacturing. He was making changes, saying, "Nope, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this."
Wow.
And to me, that just shows somebody who just cares about what they're doing. Like, every ounce of what they do is put into the CD, and it makes it real. It brings life to it, and it's not something where they're just pushing buttons and, okay, it's done, thanks, have a good day.
Well, honestly, I mean, of course his name is going to be attached to it, but if he's going that extra mile, that means he really cares about this project, but more importantly, he cares about how you are perceived, and that means everything.
It really does, and it's humbling, and it's amazing, and that's why the title of the album is Feels Like Home. Everybody on this album, we all could sit down and have a drink and dinner together and enjoy each other's company, set aside the music. You know, we could all put on our favorite albums and they would be 20 different albums. But when it comes down to it, we all have just the heart and soul behind us that if we are going to do something, we're going to be involved in it, we're going to do it the right way, and we're going to put everything we have into it. And that's what everybody in this album did for me, and I'm a lucky guy.
That's really, really awesome. Here's what I want to find out from you, because I'm really chomping at the bit to play something from Feels Like Home. I am, so I can let folks know what we're talking about and who Mike McArthur really is. And by the way, there is somebody in the chat room named Jazz Blues Brewing who would like to get together with you in regard to a Clearwater date. So Jazz Blues Brewing, you make sure that you give us some contact information, and I'll pass it along to Mike. How about that?
Wonderful.
Setting you up
for
jobs.
I'm ready.
Yes, I know you are. Tell me about one of these tracks that I just love, Sanctified.
Sanctified, when we were picking tracks for the album, Brian came to me and said, "Mike, I have a tune I want you to do." And I was open to everything at this point. I had written a few. I had a few ideas of some covers that I wanted to do. And he came to me with this tune, which Alec Milstein had written years ago for another smooth jazz sax player. And for some reason, that smooth jazz sax player's management or record company, or I don't even know who it was, felt that it wasn't right for what they were doing at the time. And it kind of got shelved. And Brian remembered it, pulled it out, talked to Alec, and said, "Hey, would you mind if Mike records this?" And played it for me, and I absolutely loved it. And we decided that was going to be it. And as we recorded the CD and it started coming together, there was no question that this was going to be the single for the actual CD and the first release, because it's just so moving and so real, and it's kind of everything it's about. It's soulful, it's funky, it's jazzy, it comes from the heart. So that's where it came from.
Yeah, it certainly comes from the heart. This just this was the first track that I heard, and I went, "My God, if this is a little gateway into the rest of the project, woohoo!"
Mm-hmm.
So let us make sure that you know this is from the forthcoming album, CD, if you will. I'm showing my age with album, but that's okay. That's what it is.
That's all right.
Feels Like Home is the name of it. This particular track is Sanctified, and this is saxophonist extraordinaire Mike McArthur on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Okay, I think you all had too much of a good time in that recording studio that day, okay?
That's for
wow.
sure.
Wow. Mike MacArthur from his forthcoming CD, Feels Like Home and Sanctified. Who was that lovely vocalization done by?
That was Alva Copeland. She was a friend of Brian's. She's along with, Janelle Sadler. Janelle is a vocalist that I've known for years. She actually was from Tampa, where I'm from, where I'm living now. And she actually did the first track and set the tone for what was going to be later done by Alva. And both of them together were amazing. Alva did the lead vocals, and both of them were doing backgrounds. And it just gave it that church feel that we wanted. There's just, you can't replicate that.
Oh, my gosh. And the English teacher in me has corrected myself. What was that vocalization as opposed to who was that vocalization? That made no sense. But you are completely correct about that because, you know, when you've got somebody who is lending his or her voice to a project and they get the whole feel of the piece, oh, isn't that priceless?
Absolutely.
Mm. I just really enjoyed that. And you, I'm looking at the notes that I have here for you, Mike. And one of the things that I wanted to gear into this year more than ever, because we've really done it in 2012, but even more so now, you really do like to reach out to students, don't you?
Absolutely. And part of that came from watching it happen with Maynard Ferguson. Being involved with, I would say, over half the tour dates that I did with Maynard were colleges or high schools. And over half of those, there were clinics involved with the concerts, which means we went into the schools during the day, worked with the kids, and then they, you know, when you hit the stage at night, they feel like they know the guys on the stage, which was an incredible thing. And when you see the kids' eyes light up when they're on the stage, they're opening up for Maynard Ferguson or whoever the artist may be, and then they're off the stage looking at you playing, their eyes light up. They feel like they're part of something good.
Yeah.
It's one of the most positive things that I think a kid could do growing up. It's given me a career, one that I wouldn't trade the world for. And it's just really important, and they're going away. Music programs are going away because, you know, just like
everything else,
lack of funding and everything. So anything that we can do to help that, the endorsements that I have with Firebird Saxophones right now and Theowani, they're all important as far as reaching the students and getting to the kids and making them aware and excited about making music.
And you know what? Until I read that particular passage about the fact that your endorsements enable you to help these young people, it just was one of those light bulb moments for me because, you know, you hear about endorsements all the time. And, of course, on Facebook, a lot of folks like to show off with their endorsements because they seem to get them on a weekly basis.
Sure, absolutely.
But here's what is the beauty of these companies making sure that you have a particular product or a brand to pitch. You are thereby given the catbird seat, if you choose, to mentor kids who ordinarily wouldn't have the chance to hear otherwise.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, like you said, the endorsements can be something that's used as a personal gain for a lot of people. And in any matter of getting an endorsement, you actually have to use that for their company and push them as well. But
sure.
To me, one of the most important things is using it for something good. I mean, we can all get another saxophone. I can get another mouthpiece. I could buy her some reeds. I could, whatever we need to get, they're tangible things. What's not tangible is the ability to get to the kids and having it set up that, okay, this guy's going to come in and he's got something going on. Get the kids excited, get them motivated, and be real about it. So giving back to the kids and not even really giving back, just making them aware of what's happening and that good things do happen with music. And it's a life lesson that you can learn that music is the universal language. It's one of those things that's the most important thing. I have a daughter. She's 5. And they have the Great American Teach-In Day. And I went in with my wife, who's a singer, and we went in and we performed for the kids. And as I was thinking about it, you know, how do you relate to 5-year-olds on how important music is or what the impact could be? And really the only way I got across to the kids was to say it is a universal language. I told them if you spoke Spanish and I talked to you about what I had for dinner, you're not going to understand me. If you spoke French and I told you where I was going to go to shop, you wouldn't know what I'm talking about. But if I played a song, you would know the melody.
Exactly.
So it really is a universal language, and it's very important for people to know that.
And have you experienced this? And if you haven't, you're certainly going to. But I would just imagine that sometimes if you're in an audience scenario and you know, for example, that there are people in that audience that are from different countries, it's so intriguing to me because I've seen it and I've known some of the people involved with these particular artist shows, and there were a couple of folks I knew, friends who were from South Africa, folks who were from France, and maybe folks from Germany. And at certain times in a song, you play a particular note or a particular passage of a song, and tears well up in people's eyes. They're not hearing any words, but the same passage of the song struck them the same way.
It's amazing. I actually did a concert this past week, and after it was over, a gentleman came up to me with tears in his eyes and basically said, thank you. I mean, he could barely speak, and it was moving. I mean, you almost don't know what to say, like, thank you, or I'm sorry, or I hope you enjoyed it. Like, it's just moving to the point where you don't know what to say. But to know that music can move somebody like that is really an amazing thing.
Oh, you never have to say you're sorry. You have done exactly what your mission is, because in sharing that gift, if it can move people like that, oh, my gosh, then it can move mountains, too.
Yeah, it's great.
Woo, Lord. You had some pretty pivotal legends, inspirations as you were coming up. And two of them that I saw were Cannonball Adderley and Paul Desmond. I love that.
Yeah, there were, you know, I grew up in upstate New York in Rochester, and I had one of the best teachers anybody could have in high school. I had a handful of teachers. But my main mentor through middle school, high school, and even to this day is a guy named Bill Tiberio in Rochester, New York.
Wow.
And he is a buddy of mine. I've played with him in the past years. I've gone to his high school up in Rochester. I've flown home and done clinics with his kids in his school. And that is something that set me on the right track to learning what a lot of people label as real jazz. Or true jazz, where it came from, you know, not necessarily the smooth jazz that we know today, which is on the more poppy side and more contemporary, but the guys who pioneered our form, our art form.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Cannonball and Paul Desmond were two of the guys that I heard first that those guys put in my hand. Mike Teitelbaum was another teacher of mine that put the Cannonball in my hands. And those guys were some of the first transcriptions I ever did. And I grew up from that to become somewhat of a jazz snob. In my younger years, I was, you know, if it wasn't bebop and it wasn't real jazz, it wasn't cool, you know. And then when you get out of school and you have to make a living, you realize, okay, well, I'm not going to feed anybody playing strictly bebop jazz anywhere. So you learn to play other styles of music, and I'm really glad that I popped out of that little phase of mine and became, you know, more a well-rounded musician rather than just a pigeonholed bebop player. And it's something that I love and respect, and everybody tries to become a better jazz player. I mean, it's just what it's all about. It's never ending. And it's just a lifelong experience trying to become a good jazz player, or any player for that matter. But the jazz, to me, real jazz players are where the roots of what we as sax players or instrumentalists come from.
I completely hear you, and I was reminded of conversations, actually a few, that I've had with Cindy Bradley, because when she was coming up, she was a young girl, and she was playing in a group that basically was like maybe 8 to 14 years old. And this gentleman, where she grew up in, is it Towanda, New York, around that
mm-hmm.
region?
Absolutely.
Cindy is from New York State, and this gentleman put together these very creative, talented, jazz-oriented kids who would play the hardcore stuff. And that is her basic education. And then she went to conservatory, and you were educated as well. So when you have that foundation, you know a sensibility about jazz whereby you can do anything.
It's true. You know, if you listen to all the pop records and songs that ever, like household names, of artists where there's saxophone solos. A lot of times, I mean, let's face it, Sonny Rollins played with Rolling Stones. You know, if you would have picked two people to put together, those are not two people that anybody would really normally just pick out of a hat.
That's right.
You know, you got Michael Brecker playing with bands like Steely Dan to, you know, straight ahead acts, you know, like Charlie Hayden. So they're just wide ends of the spectrum, and those, the reason they can do that is because they have that background and they're able to play all those styles.
Yeah, I really do like that, and I was reminded of Michael and Randy Brecker last night, and I had to educate my son's dad in knowing that Randy Brecker was actually at the formation of the original Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Absolutely, that's right.
Yeah, oh my gosh. It's so much fun to have this particular phase of your career, isn't it, Mike? Because you know what's right around the corner, don't you?
I do, and it, you know, knowing what's right around the corner is sometimes a roll of the dice, and sometimes uncharted territory can be scary. But what I've done is tried to surround myself with people that I know and love and trust to be with me. One of those is Dre, my manager, Andres Gonzalez, and he works with AMG Group Music, and he has done an incredible job at piecing all this stuff together with me and setting the tone for what we're going to be doing down the road and taking the bull by the horns. So for, you know, for all of my management contact stuff, Andres is going to be the guy to talk to. And again, not only from a business standpoint, from just a brother standpoint, you know, just hanging out and being able to relax and enjoy each other's company and go out and have a drink and forget about business for a minute. We're able to relate on that level. We both have kids, we have families. It's just something that's very important to me.
Yeah, well, you really have found some good friends, allies through the years, and sometimes that doesn't happen. As you know, Mike, you can be doing your thing and honing your craft for a while. To be able to make friends that stick and people that you can rely on to say, hey, look, got this new project coming up, and if you would like to be a part of it, I would like to have you. For them to drop everything because they like you and say, absolutely, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's very humbling. I mean, you hope that the contacts that you make and the way you have yourself perceived and all that, you know, show business stuff pays back. And it's not really about paying back. It's more about knowing that you have a solid team of people that are willing to do what it takes to get the job done. And that's really what I've ended up with. And I think if I had done this project 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I don't think I would be at a place to do what I'm doing right now. You know,
right.
Life experiences help you along with that and give you the knowledge and the friendship base and just the longevity of being in the business. That's why when you do see, you know, it's amazing to me, you see young players coming up, and when they're another good friend of mine is Eric Darius. When you see a guy like him come up in the area when he was a young kid out of high school, when you see somebody like that jump up into the ranks that quickly, it's phenomenal. We don't really understand how phenomenal that is at a young age to have all of that success and all of that happen. So for me, I'm kind of like sitting back saying, okay, I'm ready for it. You know, I have a beautiful wife and a beautiful daughter, and I'm very happy where I'm at, and I love playing the saxophone, and that's kind of the whole vibe along this whole thing, is just making it feel like home and doing what we do and let the chips fall where they may.
And, you know, what a blessing it is to have a wife who's a singer. So she knows some of the ins and outs of the music business, and she really understands where you're coming from.
Absolutely. You know, she tells me what I don't want to hear, but I need to hear sometimes.
Oh.
It keeps me straight.
Yep. Oh,
yeah, but
thank
it's great. We're
God.
able to work here in Tampa together, and it's just a wonderful thing. It's nice to have somebody on my side.
And how did you come from? I mean, that's a pretty radical change from Rochester, New York, to Florida.
Well, my first year in college, I went to Florida State School of Music.
Gotcha.
And my sister and my parents moved down at the same time. We all moved to Clearwater, where we had some family ties. And that was 1993, 94, and we all stayed. We never went back. We had enough
of
snow.
Oh, that's really special.
Yeah, so I left, actually. Everybody moved down here, and then I decided that I didn't like Tallahassee. I went back up and went to Manhattan School of Music. So, you know, we moved to Florida. Everybody moved together, and then I left again. So, you know.
Oh, well, you know what?
Do my
Everything
own thing.
Works out the way it's supposed to work out, as you just
yeah.
mentioned. And you know this is true. Sometimes these amazing situations and these blessings can come to you at a time where you don't know how to handle them. So you have to be at a maturity level and actually a generalized spiritual level where you know that balance is right there and you can handle it now.
Yes, it's very, very true.
Yeah. And with that, I think we should play Feels Like Home.
Let's do it.
Yeah. You want to tell us anything about this particular track or what the vibe was when you were...
You know, this song was just simply, I wanted to have an original tune that was mine that just felt warm and homey and fun. And I literally sat at the piano with a piece of paper, like old school. I'm not an incredible writer. I'm working on it. One of those things that everybody does. You just can't keep doing it and something sticks. But I sat down to just write a melody that I could sing. So you write a couple things and it just kind of hum it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And the first version of this song, I had it a lot faster than we had recorded it. And Ron Reinhart called me up and he goes, Mike, man, I've been playing through this tune. We need to do it slower. So I slowed it down a little bit. And then he called me up. He goes, no, I don't think you're understanding me. It needs to be a lot slower. So we slowed the tempo way down. And with Brian's upright bass on it and the real piano, it just kind of came to life and felt like home. So that was immediately the title track of the CD, and it kind of served as a foundation for the whole CD to feel that way.
Well, it's a little out of place for you since you are a Florida resident right now, but the first thing that I thought of when I heard the song was I went into complete, de-stress mode with a whole scenario of looking out the window. It's snowing. I've got my hot chocolate. I've got my slippers. And I just don't have to go anywhere except hear this incredible music.
Well, there you go. Mission accomplished.
That's right. Mike MacArthur is my guest on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and this is the title track from the soon-to-be-released Feels Like Home CD. Check this out and get your fuzzy slippers on.
Thank you.
Mike MacArthur from Feels Like Home. That is the title track. And, Mike, you know, listening to that song, I have to say this. I'm thinking one of the reasons why I like your saxophone style so much and what I've heard from the project so much is that you have a way of making songs seem familiar, but it's still a fresh journey.
Well, thank you. First of all, that's a wonderful compliment. I mean, it's hard to find your voice. I mean, I always used to wonder what, you know, everybody talks about finding their voice and becoming your own player. And we talked about before of not being able to understand some of that as a young musician, but it's true. I mean, over time, you just kind of become more solid in what you do and not worrying about what it should sound like and more about what you want it to sound like. And that's kind of the best interpretation I can give you is that I just play from the heart. If it feels good to me, I'm hoping that it feels good to the people who are listening.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, when you are thinking along the lines of what it is that you want to convey, it really does take somebody who has been a seasoned veteran on the road. You have seen so much. I mean, I was thinking how wonderful it would have been to have toured with Maynard Ferguson because you were touring internationally, were you not?
Yes.
My gosh.
We toured Europe and Asia, and I mean, it was all over. It was a lot of hotel rooms and a lot of tour bus.
And even with that, because this was another offshoot of that thought, even when you're touring with someone and you don't get to see, like if you're in Paris or Switzerland or Rome, even if you don't go out and see the city because you're holed up in a hotel room, you've got a few more hours, you've got to do whatever prep it is for the show that night, you are still away from home base and you're seeing sights and sounds and languages that sort of infiltrate your whole soul, and it changes you forever. And you come back home, and you can't help but write or interpret those feelings that you've had, because it's once you've heard them, they don't go away.
That's true. I mean, you know, the traveling is a big part of becoming a musician, I think. I mean, if you live in XYZ city and that's the only place you play, you're never going to know what's out there. And to think that I'm, you know, a saxophone player that's anything more special than anything else out there would be very, very immature for me to even think of. I mean, I don't think that way, but for some guys who think that, oh, I'm a big in this little town, well, the minute you leave, there are 500 guys that do what you do 100 times better, and they... Because they're waiting and maybe they haven't had the life experience to get to where you are yet, or they haven't been traveling enough, or the right person hasn't heard them or seen them, or, you know, somebody hasn't put any money into them, or all of those things make up what you are. And until you experience all that, there's really a certain limitation.
Ooh. We okay?
I'm here.
Okay. There's all of a sudden a lot of interference on the phone.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong.
I don't know either.
Let me switch a phone and see if it's the phone.
Yeah, that's the first time that's happened. That's wild. Okay, well, maybe I should go into Filthy McNasty then.
Sounds great.
All right, Mike MacArthur from Feels Like Home. This is something that'll get you up and moving on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. is a smoking song. Woohoo! That is Mike MacArthur, Filthy McNasty from Feels Like Home. And Mike, you know what? I just want to let you know that when I put your mic into from live into neutral, the noise stopped. So, and I saw that there was another area code exchange, another phone involved. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. The noise was coming from that particular phone, and I noticed that there was another phone number with the exact same area code, so I was confused. So hopefully this is the one that we're going to use for the next couple of minutes.
Okay, well, if you can hear me, I'm good.
Okay, just a little bit of noise now, not the noise that was there the before we broke for the song, so that's cool.
Would you like me to call in the other line?
No, it's good. As long as we have this at a minimum, everything is good.
Okay.
Yeah. So listen, tell me what you would like to have happen this year. If you could pick out one fabulous little offshoot from Feels Like Home dropping in February, what would it be?
Well, I guess just being able to play and get this music out there and have fun performing it for people who want to hear it. That's pretty much what the goal of this is to get out there and sell records and get some radio play and have a good time with it. You know, when I do go out and play a concert, have people feel like they're in my home.
Oh, that's nice. You know what? I don't think anybody's ever said that before.
Yeah, I mean, when you're sitting there watching me play, I mean, I always tell people that, you know, you're in my living room. I mean, it's our time together, and I'm your host, and let's have a good time. That's what it should be all about.
That's really something very, very special. And I like the idea that for the first time that I can recall, we actually have a setup in the chat room whereby a deal is being made to have you booked in Clearwater.
I love that.
I do, too. Because Dre is there, and Jazz Blues Brewing is they're having a little discussion back and forth about what can be done about you playing at a gig.
Wonderful.
So this is the first show of the new year. This is the first deal being made in the chat room, and life is good. This is so cool.
I love it.
I do, too. And is this the first interview in the new year that you've had in regard to Feels Like Home?
You are my first.
See, and I was gentle with you, wasn't I?
It didn't hurt that much.
And you know what? Say again to folks, because I want them to understand that when they pick up a copy of Feels Like Home at the various sites where they can do that, who is on the album with you? Because this is pretty amazing.
Well, producing the album is Brian Bromberg and playing upright bass through the whole thing. In addition to that, I have Rick Braun on trumpet, Jeff Lorber on piano and Rhodes, Jeff Golub on guitar, Ron Reinhardt is on piano and B3, Frank Third Richardson on drums, Alex Acuna played percussion on most of the album.
That is amazing. I was going to ask you about that. Wow.
Yeah, you know what was cool is one of the tracks that we did on the album was kind of part of my history kind of thing was, you know, working with Maynard, I got to play Birdland with him on a regular basis. And I wanted to do a version of Birdland. So we did for the album, and when Alex Acuna came in, you know, he was in Weather Report in the original band and recordings on that. And when he came in, I was like kind of, you know, the anxious and nervous and excited to see what he would think. And he said, man, all the guys in that band would have loved this song. So to have his stamp of approval on it and have him playing on this version of that song was just amazing. I know Maynard's hopefully listening somewhere going, man, good job, Mike, you know.
And, Mike, you know how fate would have it. That is so wild that you just told that story, because I didn't know how many songs that we were going to get to in our interview here. So I had it all planned, and I told Dre earlier that the intention was to play Filthy McNasty right into Birdland.
There you go.
That is so flippin' wild. 'Cause Birdland, you know, that was from Heavy Weather back in, 1977?
Yep.
And Weather Report had done pretty well, but when, you know, Joe Zawinul wrote Birdland, it just catapulted them into this stratosphere, and it changed the flavor of jazz forever.
Yeah, it was a monumental album as far as that goes.
Yeah, and you really like because of Maynard, and I'm so happy that you're one of those guys who really gravitates to that big band, that all-encompassing, let's get her done kind of sound,
aren't
you?
That's right. That's right. Well, the next, you know, we're already, Brian is already looking, you know, like, all right, on the next album, I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute, can we just play some gigs with this album first? But, you know, one of the things that I'll do in the future is record with a full horn section, because that's where I come from, that's what I love. So in the works for the next one around, conceptually, it will be a full horn section and more of a, even a bigger sound. So it's all part of the plan.
Oh, my gosh, Mike, that is such great news. And I'm tickled that Brian, you know, Mr. Brongberg likes to surround himself with folks who have a clue.
Well, that he does. I mean, he can pick up the phone, and everybody respects him, like you talked about before. It's the respect level for a guy like him, the work that he produces, the playing that he puts out. He's just very, very well respected. And because of that, guys will help him out. You know, we would all drop what we're doing to help out Brian, because he does so much for all of us. So I actually will be playing with Brian the last Saturday of this month. I'm going to be in L.A. January 26th, I'll be out there, and I'm doing an event called Saxophones Unleashed. And that's at the Sheridan Park Jazz Stage as part of the NAMM show.
Oh, yeah.
And Brian will be joining me on bass, along with a great friend of mine who toured with Diane Scher's band, drummer Reggie Jackson, and he's currently touring with Dr. John. And pianist Tom Zink will be on piano for that show, too. So it's going to be a great show that Saturday night in L.A.
Well, make sure, just as you have a NAMM video on one of your websites, make sure video gets done so we can share that with folks who need to see the chemistry between you and Brian Brongberg, because it's pretty special.
I will, for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. And where is a website where people can go to learn more about you, and where will your CD become available?
The CD will be available February 26th everywhere. And
okay,
as far as getting a hold of Mike and management, you can go to amggroupmusic.com and look under the artist roster there, and you can find me, as well as just going to mikemacarthur.com.
Wonderful. Mike, I can't tell you how happy I am to have spent the better part of an hour with you. I really believe in your future and your music, and you've got your head on serenely straight, which is awesome.
Well, thank you for taking the time to have me on and promoting jazz like you do tirelessly, and I hope we can continue to do lots more things in the future together.
I hope so, too, and hopefully sometime this year, wherever, I'll be able to come and see you play.
You got it. I'll come up there and visit you. We'll come do a gig up there.
Oh, I would love it. All right, we'll have to talk about that.
You got it.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you, Trish.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I love it. Oh, my gosh, what an awesome sound. Oh, my gosh, I can't tell you. And you know what? We might get to a fourth track before the end of Hybrid Jazz is all over. We end at 4 o'clock Eastern time today. We might just do that. So put a bookmark in that thought. And let us be able to play something for you now from our second guest. I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to do that before she came on, but let's do it, shall we? Yeah. I want to be able to play this song by Jackie Ryan. She's got a new CD coming out, too, in a matter of days, called Listen Here. And this is one of those versions of a song you thought maybe you had heard the definitive version, but let me open your ears to another interpretation of I Love You, Porgy. Check it out.
I want to stay here, but I ain't worthy. You is too decent to understand that when I see Someday I know he's coming back to call me. He's gonna handle me and hold me so. It's gonna be like dying Porgy deep inside me. But when he calls, I know I have to go. I love you, Porgy. Don't let him take me. Don't let him handle me and drive me. Someday I know he's coming back to call me. Oh, he's gonna handle me and hold me so. It's gonna be like dying Porgy deep inside me. But he's cold, I know I have to go. I love you, Porgy. Don't let him take me. Oh, don't let him handle me. If you can keep me, I wanna stay with you forever. I've got
at a loss for words. I had a reaction when I heard Jackie Ryan do that song the first time, getting a hold of Listen Here, the new CD, before a lot of other folks. I just didn't know what to do because I'm used to Jackie just pouring out the emotion, having this incredible technique and incredible truth at the same time. But that's a different kind of song entirely. And when you hear it in that kind of vessel, you're just stunned. I Loves You, Porgy, from Listen Here by the incredible, actually one of the most incredible vocalists I have ever known or will hope to know, Jackie Ryan. And she is on the phone with us. Jackie.
It's me. It's Jackie.
How do you like that intro, baby?
It kind of brought me to tears, actually.
Jackie.
So sweet. Thank you so much.
I mean it with every fiber of my being.
Boy, I got to get a quote from you on that one. Thank you.
Well, you know what? It really is the case. And, you know, I won't belabor this point because
go
I've
ahead and
gone.
Belabor.
Oh, you are a trip.
My ego needs constant nourishing.
Well, honestly, it's not the case. It usually is not the case, and I'll speak freely, that somebody has this technique that could write volumes to other people who need to know how to express a particular voice. You have the technique, and you also have the ring of truth. When
Thank
you bring
you
those,
so
oh my God, you, oh girl, I just got a chill saying it.
Oh, I'm getting chills listening to you. Thank
Seriously,
you.
There is no one like you on the planet.
Oh, that's so
yeah.
Nice to say.
And listen, that's the truth. And now with this, holy shiggity, as the kids say in Baltimore. Listen Here is a whole nother breed of cat, isn't it? Are you psyched?
Well, you know, so much goes into making a CD. And,
yes.
And there's a story behind all this, but I had a lot going on with my family at the time that I recorded this.
Yes.
Intense things going on with my family. My nephew died right when I was making this, and my
God
father was
you.
In a major hospital situation that was very, very bad. And I was, you know, the one who was supposed to be taking care of things. And it was so, I was just rattled from every aspect of my life. But, the recording sessions are hard to set up because everybody's schedules are all over the place, and I had to
yes.
fly them out to Los Angeles and, you know, and organize all that. So that's hard to do, and you don't want to cancel something like that. And so everybody would give me their blessing just to do it, and I had things taken care of at home. But I was just focus, you know. But so you're hearing a lot of that emotion, I guess, you know, in the CD.
Jackie, I could hear your heart breaking.
Well, it's, you know, and that song, anyway, you know, Porgy, boy.
Shoot.
I've always, I heard Porgy and Bess when I was young. I don't know exactly when it was. Maybe I was 12 or something. My sister took me to see it, my older sister. It floored me, you know, because I didn't know that kind of music, you know, and then all of a sudden I hear this Gershwin music and these incredible opera singers, you know, and incredible, you know, singing this jazz Harlem style music, knocked me out, you know, at that age. And I think that kind of directed me in a way, you know. Anyway, so it's kind of been in my blood in the same way the Spanish music is in my blood. It's just been in my blood simmering for a long time. And I just started singing the song about a year ago or 2 years ago on stage, and it seemed to like completely overwhelm me, the song, just because I just became Bess. And I just understand her the pool going back and forth, you know, both ways, you know, this life that she has and this life that she wants. And I just feel it so much in her character, you know. And you know, something that a lot of people don't know, the story Porgy, it was actually a book first, and George Gershwin read the book about 10 years before he wrote this musical opera. A lot of people don't know that DuBose Hayward wrote the book, and he had polio as a child, and he lived among the Gullah people in South Carolina, and his mother sang, and he sang in church with them. So he really had a great empathy for these people. So you really feel that in this story, you know, how I think it's such a tender story. You know?
Oh, it's just magnificent. Yes. And then you are able to convey in this true jazz fashion. You're one of the true jazz singers are left on our earth, for sure.
Thank you.
And you are able to put an operetta within this jazz presentation. So I hear the whole story when you sing.
Good.
Woo!
Well, I'm not thinking about all those technical aspects, you know. The song does that. I mean, to me, you can't go wrong. There's the song. It's so beautiful. And if you understand the character, then how can you not do that? I don't know how not to sing it that way. You know, I couldn't sing it any other way. You know?
Oh, well, look, you know, a lot of people have tackled songs through the years that they had no right to sing because it was just a technique for them, just a way to display their vocal prowess.
Mm-hmm.
But when you understand a song and it gets deep into your soul, it's more than just the word of the week to me is resonates. Oh, it resonated with me. It was more than that. It got into your soul and grabbed you and shook you.
Yeah, you're supposed to do that.
Yeah,
that's what it's supposed to do. You know,
well,
that's what the music's about. You know, really. And I mean, gosh, it shouldn't be so hard getting that music out there, man. It's you know, in this country particularly, it's hard getting the jazz. I mean, they're cutting the jazz stations left and right. They're cutting school programs for music. The only way this music is continuing is by the grassroots movement of keeping it alive, you know, teachers going and doing jazz education festivals and, you know, just, you know, people having concerts in their homes. And we're keeping it alive, you know, but our culture, the powers that be, are making it really hard for us. Really, it's so sad because a lot of the jazz stations are just, you know, they're dropping like flies. You know, and it's just really getting hard. It was already hard, but it's getting harder. So, you know, you got to fight for it, you know, and it shouldn't be so hard to get the truth out there, you know. But it
well,
is.
Well, you know, Jackie, I have to say this, and I completely understand what you're saying. And first of all, some of those smooth jazz stations should have gone away anyway. That's for sure. Number two, did I just say that? Yeah.
Yeah.
number two. You know, with a lot of the jazz programming, it was partial programming on public service stations.
It was. Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's not a really bad thing. But what has to happen is there has to be a way for folks to get the concept that a 24-hour-a-day commercial jazz station that's done right can be the way to go. And all it needs is for one radio station for that to be successful, and you will see them happening all over America and the world.
Yeah, wishful thinking. But, I mean, it is happening in other parts of the world. They've got jazz stations all over Europe that are 24/7. You know, they're really into it in Europe and Asia, you know. But here it's just harder, and this is our music, you know.
Well, you know,
I don't mean to complain, but anyway.
No,
I want it to get out there, you know.
Absolutely, and we should talk about it. I guess I'm more optimistic because I really do think that the tides are going to turn. You'll get a kick out of this.
Yeah.
I get these mailers all the time from All Access Media, which is online, and I get mailers from Arbitron. And it's so funny because one of the first emails that I got at the beginning of the year was from All Access that says, well, the polls show that adult contemporary radio is number one or whatever. Like all hit radio. And I'm thinking to myself, that's because that's all we freaking hear.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah, right. What are people going to do? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not going to vote for something I don't hear.
Yes, right. That's right.
So,
and, you know, until like this year, you're not going to believe this, but the Grammys, they did not allow people to hear the music of the submissions of the CDs. That was not allowed. And I couldn't believe it until I talked to someone who was actually on one of the committees, and he said, no, as a, you know, as a member, as a whatever, at the top ranks of this, you know, he said that you weren't allowed to listen to it, as if that was unfair somehow. So that's why you kept seeing the same people getting nominated over and over, you know, because that's all they knew. So no one new could really get in there. I think it's changed now. I think you can now hear. But it's
unbelievable.
It's strange. You know, so frustrating. But,
and see, this, you know, for this is not to be totally negative in saying about the American public, but you know where I'm coming from. There are a lot of sheep in this country.
Well, you know, it's not their fault. It's not the American public, because I think human beings are human beings, and everyone has the same feelings and sensitivities, you know, but we really are not allowed or given access to things that other countries are. And that's our power structure here, the media structure, and I don't know, we could go on about this forever, but
I'm not quite sure
why, you know, why music is being cut in the schools and why all the jazz stations are being cut, and, you know, I don't know why, because it's our music here, but it's you know, it's our culture, but in other countries, our American jazz is huge, you know. One example is the jazz festivals over in Europe, you know.
Yes.
And they're huge, you know, big. I mean, they're big here too, but the when you have volunteers at the festivals and things like that, the volunteers in America are often people in their 70s, you know, who are retired and this and that. Over in Europe, the volunteers are all in their 20s. And they're so excited. Oh, jazz, you know, jazz stars.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, that tells you something, doesn't it? You know?
Yes.
You know,
yes,
so.
It does.
Yeah.
And honestly, and we, you know, we don't have to dwell on this, but
right.
The fact of the matter is that if the Grammy decision makers hadn't allowed folks to hear the breadth of music that was involved. So consequently, the same people were voted on again and again.
Right.
That sends a signal out to the American public at large to indicate
mm-hmm.
that jazz has gone away.
Right, right. And it has not gone away. It's there.
It's not. Right.
It's very much there and very, very, very vibrant. You know, it's really exciting to go to some of these jazz education festivals, which are really big, and the young people who are learning jazz. Wonderful. I mean, I just came back from one in Utah where it's called Juilliard Goes to the Mountains, and Carl Allen puts that on, and you know, I was invited to that, and a lot of the teachers from Juilliard come really in the mountains of Utah. But in Utah, the Mormon people have a lot of money to spend on this, and it was wonderful. And they were, you know, so you have all these African American teachers teaching these very Mormon young people how to play jazz. It was like,
wow.
That's really cool. I've got a photo of Carl Allen holding this little tiny blonde baby, little very, very white-skinned little baby, and they're both smiling, and I thought, this is kind of beautiful.
You know? I love it.
So there's things like that going on, you know, that are kind of encouraging, you know.
Those that know, teach.
That's right.
That's awesome. And
yeah.
And tell us the story. How did John Clayton and you got together? Because this is so cool.
Well, it's kind of been a fantasy of mine for many years. And I sang in 2009 maybe, or 2007. I don't remember. You and the Night of Music. I did this concert down at the party. And with Samir Handelman and, you know, that. And John Clayton was in the audience, and it was about 1,000 people in the audience. And because John's band, the Clayton Hamilton Orchestra, was going to be playing too. And he heard me there. And from that, he invited me to, he runs the Lionel Hampton Jazz Festival, which is also an education festival. He invited me to that. And it's kind of always been in the back of my head because then when I saw his band there, I was jumping out of my chair. I could not believe that big band. My
yeah.
God. And I was just, I'm very verbal when I'm in an audience. I was, no! You know, I was screaming. And this man, they put this man, well, there was an open seat next to me, and there were someone was wheeling a wheelchair of a blind paraplegic man. And I saw him, and it looked like somebody I wanted to know. So I said, why don't you put him next to me, you know? And he kind of reminded me of Ray Charles, you know, the way he looked and everything. And it turned out that he was really good friends with the Clayton Hamilton Jazz Orchestra. He couldn't see, but every time someone played, he knew exactly who was playing. Yeah, Snooki, you know. And so we became good friends.
Whoa.
And we started calling each other over the years, like every few weeks. And I just loved this guy. And he was always saying to me, you need to sing with the Clayton Hamilton Orchestra, you know. And I said, oh, well, you know, sure, one day, you know. And so I just loved this guy so much. He endured so much in his life, you know, with his physical problems and everything. But he just loved music so much. And I thought, you know, his name was Harry Lewis. That's why I dedicated it to him. So I said, I'm gonna do this for Harry. So I called up John Clayton and I said, would you be interested in working with me on a CD, you know? And he said, sure.
How about that?
And, you know, and I had to do it for Harry. Because I, you know, like I just for myself, you know, I maybe not have the nerve, but I love Harry so much that I thought, well, okay, I'm going to make Harry so happy. And anyway, Harry passed away, unfortunately, before.
Did he?
Well, yeah, he went into he had a stroke, and then he survived a couple more months, but no one could tell if he could hear anything. So I would go and I would whisper to him, it's going to happen, Harry, you know, so I hope he heard me. So his spirit was in there, too. And anyway, so I just, John was asking me, you know, who would you like to play on the CD? And I you know, of course I had several people in mind, and I'd say, well, he's good, he's great, you know. But then I said finally, you know, John, why don't you pick who you like or who you feel best? Because I like to give that to people when I'm working with them, you know. I'd say, because it's their creative juice I want, you know. So I just said, you pick the band, you know. And so he did. And
boy, he sure did.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I just knocked out. And Gerald, my God, his son, on piano. He's just phenomenal.
And I'm looking at the other. I'm so glad that I got this CD in time, by the way. Thank
you.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Express mail.
Oh, bless your heart. And 14 tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jackie.
Like you give people their money's worth, you know.
you sure did, because lest anybody doesn't know this or if you need to be reminded, Doozy, Jackie's previous double record set 7 weeks on top of the jazz charts, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that felt really good.
I'll bet. And actually, one of the funnier things that I've heard on radio in the past few years, oh, my God. And I won't mention who it was or what the call letters were, but I was in an area where I heard a jazz radio station play you, and then I heard them the next week play you again. And the two co-hosts of the show were going, wow, we really know who Jackie Ryan is now.
Good.
Because they were not aware of you, and all of a sudden – you were everywhere.
Yay.
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 Isn't
well,
that
I love the
awesome.
DJs. You know, they're so cool. And they're not doing it for money. You know, most of them are probably poor, but they love music. So I feel like, to me, that's my biggest validation is that they liked it. You know, it's not like it was you needed to know somebody or there was some kind of, you know, I don't know, you know, political thing going on. You know, if the DJs like it, then they're going to play it, you know. And to me, that's the biggest validation because I don't have to do some kind of political maneuvering or something, you know. And what, you know, if they like it, their listeners are asking for it, that's what makes it number one. And I feel like, what else is there, you know, really? So I was happy with that.
Yeah, I would imagine you would. And honestly, this is probably going to do the same thing, Jackie, when this comes out, because you stripped away that other layer that you had left as far as emotion is concerned.
It's more, a little more raw, huh?
yes. And that really does mean a lot. And I know that you said that your time was limited. Before we go, I want to folks to know how specially you felt about Abby Lincoln and why you chose Throw It Away for Listen Here.
Well, I love the song, and I have been singing that one for a long time, too.
Yeah.
I love the message of that, you know, well, give your love, give your life each and every day.
Mm.
And, you know, in my life, that's kind of how I like to live. And I loved her, where she was coming from as an artist. You know, she was pretty cool. She was pretty avant-garde.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not in a bad way, just out there, you know. And she wrote this song. In fact, when I presented this song to John Clayton, he'd never heard it before. And he said, "Who wrote that?" And I said, "Abby Lincoln." He said, "She wrote everything? She wrote the music and the words?" And I said, "Yeah. But, you know, she's a woman, you know, maybe, I don't know, she's not so well known to instrumentalists, you know, maybe as much as maybe to singers." And he's knocked out by that song, you know. I love the simplicity, her heart, where she was coming from, her kind of bohemian nature. Someone told me that this song, and I don't know if this is true, might have something to do with the tarot. I found these magic words in a magic book, throw it away, like throwing it, you know, down. But I'm not sure. But anyway, it says a lot to me, and every time I've performed this song, people really love this song. So I wanted to pick out the songs that I've been performing anyway that people really resonated with. What the heck? Might as well record them, you know. She was married to Max Roach.
Yes.
Incredible drummer. And he kind of introduced her to New York upper elite jazz, and they did this album called We Insist Freedom Jazz Suite, and it was pretty avant-garde, you know. But I dig her for that. I actually made an avant-garde record once, which I don't talk about. But I'm willing to go there, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that. But anyway, it's you know, I like that she was that open and free, you know. And I love her music, you know. So anyway. I dug her. So she started out as an actress.
And absolutely. And
yeah.
It's pretty interesting how the caterpillar became the butterfly.
Yeah.
Because she was in that 1956 movie, The Girl Can't Help It.
Oh, yeah.
And she was wearing Marilyn Monroe's dress from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes in that movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. Boy, you know some things. I didn't know that.
Yes. And then, you know, Max became accustomed to, it's really interesting because the commemoration of Max Roach's birthday is coming up in a couple of days.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about that. But he saw this beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, men are visual creatures, so that's how their attraction started. But then they morphed into this very, very strong civil rights mode.
Right.
And then Max realized that he could not have that beauty queen at home and the civil rights spokesperson that articulated it so well. So their relationship kind of deteriorated. But
yeah, that happens, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating how she just got out of all of her elements and became her own person.
Yes, she did. Absolutely. She became the artist that she really was inside. You know, of course, when she was younger and trying to make it in films, you know, she did what she was supposed to do. But she always had something about her that was kind of special. In the movie Nothing But a Man, I just thought she was really cool. I don't know. She was something special, you know. But then she turns into this really great artist. And
she was a great old lady.
Yeah, she was.
we We had her up until 80, and she was just awesome. And you got it.
I'm a great old lady, too.
You are not.
Yeah, well, not too long now.
No, you got quite a few years to go. You'll be doing avant-garde stuff when you're an old lady.
Oh, well, I already did that.
You'll go back.
Maybe. Who knows?
Well, this is Jackie Ryan's interpretation. It's just exquisite. Throw It Away from the soon-to-be-released Listen Here album, which is just phenomenal. I want you to hear this woman's golden throat again on Hybrid Jazz. Check it out.
It belongs.
Jackie, I'm done. Wow. That's just magnificent.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, and
Gerald Clayton.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's I don't know, 23 or something. He's really young, and the pianist I'm talking about, and isn't that incredible? I mean, his playing is so sensitive. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, like that was one take on that tune.
Oh, my God. And I'm glad you said that because it was like a dance. It
really... it was.
Jeez.
And you can't do that again.
No.
You know, that's it. You know, and that was completely spontaneous, that ending there.
Oh.
I didn't know where they were going. They didn't know where I was going. And that was really cool to do that in the studio like that. And that's one thing about, you know, John Clayton... running this, he's not into doing a lot of takes. So he's like, that's it. We did it, you know. And that's cool, you know. So, I love playing that with these guys. They were so sensitive. Man, what a band.
Oh, and you, and I know that I'm not going to keep you too much longer, but one of the things that I enjoyed so much about that song was as it just went down this winding road and you didn't know where it was going to go, I felt like you closed your eyes somewhere in that studio and you were transformed back to when you were a little girl and your mom was singing around the house.
Oh, well, that's possible. And I think that's always in there, you know?
Yeah.
That's always in there, definitely, that connection to her. And,
thank God for it.
God for it. I mean, you know, she didn't live very long, you know. But yeah. I always say that she was like love incarnate. My mother, she was so cute and sweet. She just loved us, you know, Mexican mommies. They just love their little kids, you know. And she was just so loving and also funny and just playful and sweet, you know. And so I always say, even though she only lived, you know, until I was 15, I wouldn't trade that, you know, for any other kind of relationship because she gave us so much love.
Oh,
you know?
Gosh. And she gave you the wherewithal, whatever it is inside of you, to propel yourself into music. You always have that. She enabled that gift to come to life.
She did. She did, just by her essence, I think, you know.
Yes.
And it's genetic, too, maybe, because both my parents sang and their parents,
yeah,
and et cetera, et cetera. But, so it's in there. I mean, I was singing when I was a little tiny thing, you know, like 3. So I've always been singing. It comforts me. When I was little, I would sing myself to sleep. I mean, I remember doing that. My siblings pounding on the wall telling me to shut up, you know. But I just... singing, you know, and it comforted me, you know. And I saw this little baby recently at a park, and the baby was probably two, little boy, adorable, and he was singing up a storm. And I thought, wow. And so I said to his parents, you know, this kid is going to be a singer. And they said, oh, yeah. And I said, are you musicians? And they said, yeah. So I said,
how about that?
That must be when I started, you know, because I have a real memory of doing it when I was four, but I'm sure I was when I was much littler. They said I used to rock my crib across the room.
Whoa!
Rocking.
Now, there's an image.
I know. I still do that kind of thing. So.
Well, you know, of all the people that I've talked to, this is not our first interview, but honestly, of anybody that I can think of, I didn't write a whole lot of notes, and I'm going to let you go. I usually would say who you've worked with, and it doesn't matter if folks want to know about you and your background, JackieRyanMusic.com has the answers for you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter with you, because the phrasing that I would always use for another artist is he or she has worked with so-and-so, and they are great, and in turn, the artist has become great. But those artists that you've worked with, they should be grateful that they worked with you.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. That means a lot. Thank you. Well,
Jackie.
I put the musicians I work with on such a pedestal. You know, I mean, and they deserve to be there, and I'm just so in awe of them, you know, because I come from this little tiny small town, and I don't know, I wasn't exposed to jazz until a little later, you know, so I was always singing, but, you know, so these jazz musicians, I just in awe of them, you know, and I'm just pinching myself that, wow, I'm working with these incredible people, you know. So
well, that's no accident. And for musicians around you to get who you are, I'm so grateful that you have had these folks put in front of you who are probably still talking about those sessions and going, doggone, we were playing with Jackie Ryan.
Well, we had fun. I know that. And they're all beautiful people, you know. I mean, no egos there. You know, they're just about the music, and they're sweet people, and they're humble people. They're not like, you know, divas. They're just about the music, and that's what made it.
Oh, thank God.
Oh,
my
yeah.
Gosh. That makes such a difference, because you do not want somebody to honor the genre of jazz that we love so much by thinking of themselves first. You know, you've got to think of who came before you and who is passionate about it now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I teach some, and my first thing I say to singers, because singers have a special challenge. We're not playing an instrument. We're not looking down at something and playing it. We're exposed. We're naked in front of an audience. And it's hard.
Yes.
It's harder for singers because, you know, it makes you very self-conscious to be so vulnerable and open in front of a bunch of people staring at you, you know?
Yes.
I always tell them it's not about you. It's about the music. And get that in your head. It's about the music. Because I told myself that, and when I really realized, you know, that, I got over my stage fright. You know, it's like, okay, this isn't about me. It's about the music. And I need to present this music in the highest way possible. And then it's not like, oh, do I look good, or am I, you know, standing right, or, you know, this stuff, you know. Just when you go there, and that's what I think Abby Lincoln was about, and all of those great singers, they were about the music. And I think, you know, it's a really important thing to tell singers nowadays, because they get kind of hooked up in, like, being hip and, you know, doing all these things that have nothing to do with actually being in the song, actually becoming the song. And I think that's just really important.
And actually, you are correct about that more than one conversation, actually, because hip comes to be because somebody was being authentic.
Right, and that is hip, you know, but
right.
Someone's trying to be, quote-unquote, hip by doing...
Doesn't work.
Yeah, fancy vocal things that they can't quite do or that... Well, mainly for me, when I hear someone singing without any connection to their heart or the meaning of the song, when I hear singing that's technical,
yes,
you know, and it's very good, maybe I admire it, I say, wow, that's very, very good, but I'm not getting a thing out of this. You know, it's not touching me. And that's what I call like just trying to be hip rather than how about let's hear your heart. You know, that's what the music's about.
You are completely on the money. A long time ago when I was involved in country music, because that was for a while, one of the folks, the artists who taught me everything I needed to know about music, whatever genre it was Michael Martin Murphy, who's an aging cowboy singer now who's living in New Mexico. And he said he had a song called The Ring of Truth.
Oh, yes.
And yes. It was a beautiful song, and the chorus line was something along the lines of, the ring of truth, like a church bell, it just stands out in your head, and nothing else will do except for the clarity of hearing that.
That's right, and what's this, the big country singer.
There's a few of them now.
I know. The rough one who was in prison. Johnny Cash. my brain. He also did that with his wife, I think. And it came from, I think it came from a Buddhist book or saying.
I'll have to look into that.
I look into that because I read that somewhere, you know, him talking about that after she had died.
Wow.
Right, but I think they recorded that together. But you know, yeah. So that's it. Yeah.
That means everything. You can be as technically proficient as anyone who has ever taken a breath, but if you don't believe it, if it leaves you feeling cold,
right.
It's meaningless.
Yeah, and in fact, to me, it doesn't just make me feel cold. It actually, I find it painful.
Yes, I can hear that. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't listen to someone playing technically or particularly singing, because singing is so much a part of the body, singing in a technical way without connection to their soul or heart. When I hear it, I have to turn it off. It insults me somehow. I have a hard time with it. I can't explain why. I don't mean it for it to insult me, but it hurts because it's I don't know. I have turned people off when I'm hearing them on the radio, and I think, ah! And some big names I won't mention, but I mean, I think, no, you're not, you know, you're not doing this. You're not connecting to your heart here, and so I have to turn it off.
I completely get what you're saying. As a matter of fact, I've been pretty public about this in the past few weeks. You know, I've played a lot of artists on this show, and I want those folks who have something to say, whether it be an instrument or their voice, to get an audience. But I have to believe it when I hear it. And if I can't, I don't care whether 9 million Fakaka people have told me that they're fabulous. If I don't feel it, I don't want to play it.
Good for you. Well, you are listening to your soul. And that's what I think is so important that people get, that music is about that. It's about that connection. And it especially with jazz, you know, because it takes a lot of technical expertise to do a lot of it, you know. So you have to do that. But you gotta connect that to the inner heart. And all these musicians on the CD do, obviously, you know, very obviously. But if I hear it, the other thing... I don't like it. And yet people, like a friend of mine, you know, I don't know if you know Bob Perkins, who works at WRTI. He's a jazz programmer. And he's
Okay, I don't know him personally, but I sure know WRTI.
Oh, well, that's BP with the GM. He's been very, very good to me. But he always says people are used to tasting the mock turtle soup. They never tasted the real turtle soup. So
oh.
They don't know any better. But once they tasted the real turtle soup, they can't go back to the mock.
That's right. That's right. Oh, Bob, that's very wise. And from what you said earlier, Jackie, I'm going to sign out with something that now means more to me because of what your explanation was for Listen Here.
What I think it is, does it begin with A?
Yes.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about the song, a little bit, that I found out that why we did it the way we did it. This song was inspired. Johnny Mercer wrote the lyrics and Harold Arlen the music, but Johnny Mercer heard the Reverend Divine do a sermon, and this sermon was these words. And so this song was really written from a sermon by the Reverend Divine, who was very big in those 30s or 40s. And what he was doing was teaching the school of thought of positive thinking, because he felt that his congregation, if they thought positive thoughts, they could change their lives. And it was the birth of the New Thought movement.
God bless him.
Yeah. So that's really, so that's why I added the introduction to this song that many people haven't heard, and that's what it's about.
And you, going through, enduring what you were experiencing in your life while you were creating this monumental work, and for you to do a song, accentuate the positive, that took every fiber of your being to pull that off, girl.
Yes, it does. But that's what it's about. You know, when I die, I want to be completely used up. I'm getting there.
You are so funny. Where can people buy the CD when it's available, and can they get it now early?
They can. Well, it's on iTunes now.
Awesome.
And it also, you can go onto Amazon. And I think you can pre-order it, but you'll be getting it in a few days anyway, so you go ahead and pre-order it on Amazon. It's also being distributed to any of the stores we have left, like Barnes & Noble, you know, places like that. And you can also go to our website, JackieRyan.com, but it's available. You can get it.
And will you sign it if folks come to your website?
Yes, I'll send you a signed copy.
See, that's, and you signed mine, and I'm going to treasure it always. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you for your wonderful work and promoting music, you know, and real music.
as long as I have this forum, Jackie, and as long as I have the kind of talent that you possess, it's going to be a joy, because this is not easy to do week after week, but it doesn't matter. It has to be done. And someday there is going to be a situation whereby this three-hour show becomes a full-time radio station, and you are going to be the first person who's going to be my guest.
Thank you. You are definitely accentuating the positive, and I appreciate that so much.
Jackie Ryan, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I will see you down the road. We'll check out your schedule on Jackie Ryan Music.
Thank you, Trish. Take care.
Thank you, Jackie. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, my goodness. I am so grateful that we had the opportunity to talk to Jackie Ryan and Mike MacArthur before Jackie. I want you to hear something that I think we all need to hear for this year. You haven't heard this song probably in a dog's age. This is Going Back Now, Accentuate the Positive, from Jackie's Listen Here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo!
Gather around me, everybody. Gather around me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. be sin, and that's what I'm again. If you wanna hear my story, then settle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. You got to accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative, and don't mess with Mr. In Between. Yeah, you gotta spread joy up to the maximum and bring gloom down to the minimum. And have faith or pandemonium is liable to walk upon the scene. Well, to illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. Well, what did they do just when everything looked so dark? Don't you know they had to accentuate the positive and Mr. In Between? No, no. said we better accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative and latch on to the affirmative and don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. one of the coolest songs ever. I'm telling you what, if you were to ask 10 favorite songs, 10, 15 favorite songs, that would be in there. Whatever that vibe is that Lynn Rountree and Gail Johnson had when they were in the studio together, trumpet and piano, working it out like that. And again, how many times have I said this? Whenever you throw in a name to a song, especially a female name, when you have a song called Seasons, Kaylin's song, there is imbued in that an extra measure of love. It happens without fail, and this is no exception. And Lynn Rountree is going to get a mention here because of the fact that that is from his Soul Tree, the Soul Jazz Experience project that was out a couple of years ago. And Lynn, hopefully, will be on Hybrid Jazz next Tuesday, because he is coming to Washington, D.C. on the 17th to Blues Alley. So he'll be talking about that. So this will be our second go-round. Lynn was with me from the very beginning of the show 2 Augusts ago, and we just had a ball, and we're going to have the same kind of deal going on next Tuesday. So we'll keep you posted about that. We heard, too, from Cannonball Adderley, along with Bill Evans on piano, who wrote the song, and Percy Heath on bass, and Connie Kelly on drums from 1961. Shoo! Know What I Mean? Know What I Mean? Is the name of the album, and Waltz for Debbie is the name of the song. The rhythm section, by the way, from the Modern Jazz Quartet, joined Cannonball and Friends for that. Bill Evans wrote that song for his niece, Debbie, and it was originally heard in the 1956 New Jazz Conceptions LP. And then he also did Waltz for Debbie live in 1961. And, man, just really a beautiful waltz, a jazz waltz made for a trio. And just really neat to have read a little bit about Bill Evans. I wanted to concentrate some thoughts and some focus on him. And we'll have to delve more into him as time continues, because this year is all about playing great music. Not just good, great. There's a lot of good stuff out there, and to pick and feel and choose about what great music is, oh gosh. So consequently, I'm sure glad that Mike MacArthur was my first guest of the new year, and Jackie Ryan quickly followed that up. That was pretty wonderful. We're going to delve again, speaking of Mike, hopefully in the time that has passed and playing the songs that you've just heard, I was able to, yeah, it's there. I wasn't sure I was going to get to a fourth track from Feels Like Home. Usually there's only three that we like to feature, but since we had a little bit of a scenario in that first hour and felt compelled to play one of the other tracks, Filthy McNasty, woo-hoo! I wanted to make sure you heard a fourth track, Jean-Pierre. And if Mike was still here, we'd hear the story behind Jean-Pierre from Feels Like Me. But you'll hear about that in another interview that he does somewhere down the road. So here we go. Mr. MacArthur, if you will, on saxophone, and a track that will tickle your fancy. Every single one of them will. Feels Like Home is going to be out in February, and we'll be hearing more tracks on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Here we go. that Weather Report and Birdland were going to get mentions today, huh? Mike MacArthur out of the Clear Blue. Oh, and the plan was to play one of his songs back-to-back with Birdland, and I got a chance to do it anyway. But, oh, I just love the way these things all work out. Joe Zawinul, oh, my gosh, wrote two of the most glorious songs we have ever heard. Mercy, 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 and Birdland, in tribute to that fabulous club in New York on 52nd Street, and also a tribute to Charlie Parker, and that's why Birdland was called Birdland. Man, that song from the mid-70s, Weather Report was already doing pretty well, actually, but then they hired Jaco Pastorius, he came on board, Birdland came out, and all of a sudden Weather Report exploded. Oh, it was just a beautiful thing to comprehend. An award-winning song, a jazz standard at this point, and you have to understand that the song that you just heard, just like Jackie Ryan was talking about her song, a tribute to Abby Lincoln, Throw It Away, Jackie and the band did that in one take. Birdland was done in one take. It's nuts to think about that because there's so much work that gets poured into these recording sessions, and when the magic strikes, you better have that tape rolling. Oh, that's old now. It's not tape anymore, but you get the understanding of what I'm trying to say here. Just so nice. And Mike MacArthur, we heard from a fourth track from Feels Like Home. Woo! That was called Jean-Pierre. Thank you, Brian Bromberg, for helping your friend out to do such a magnificent job on this new project. I'm so excited for Mike, and what a classy guy. Wrote to me after the interview was over to say thank you. Baby, there's going to be more of those interviews coming up. You can best believe it. Let's try to get some more songs in, shall we? We had a lot happen in the month of December and over the holiday break. Christian Scott, for example, got married to his beautiful Isadora. So I thought it would be a really cool thing to do, since I already said Kaylin's song from Lynn Roundtree's album, once you have a woman's name or a girl's name, whatever the case is, sister, daughter, lover, wife, mother, there's just an extra element of love involved in this. And you'll hear it. One of the great young trumpeters that we have from Yesterday, You Said Tomorrow, this is Christian Scott and Company, Isadora on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. Well, everybody's got a favorite song by somebody, right? And that's mine by Sade. Woohoo! Right there, 1985 from Promise. The soon-to-be birthday girl, Sade, will turn 54 on January 16th, the same date as my late sister Jean. So I always know that Sade is having a birthday. And I just found this out. I love this. Sade's full name is actually Helen Folashade Adu. And Folashade means honor confers your crown. I love that. Here's something else I didn't really know. I knew that Sade at one time had been married to somebody, but she was married to the Spanish film director Carlos Pliega. Didn't know that. You always find out some things about someone who conveys that much mystery. She likes to be very private. She had her big tour last year. She really likes her privacy. She's really actually called semi-reclusive, but I think that she's pretty happy these days. I think she's happily situated with someone who is a mate in her life, and her daughter's doing well. So, yeah, Sade, the sweetest taboo. Whew, it's hot in here. Is it me? And just so you know, I would love to talk to her mom. I don't know if her mom is still living or not, but Sade's dad is or was a Nigerian lecturer, and mom, Anne, was an English district nurse. And, man, just the combination of those two cultures coming together, just fascinating. And she is. And thank you, Matt, for passing along that she's one of your favorites. Mine, too. Just had to grab that particular track and put it next to Greg Adams and Burma Road from Hidden Agenda back in 1995, 10 years after Sade and Promise. Have to say, I won't belabor this point because I want to get to a couple more songs, but Greg Adams and East Bay Soul were so good over Christmas. December 29th at Ram's Head in Annapolis, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then Greg and the guys went on to Scholars in Boston for the 30th and then New Year's Eve, and apparently the roof just continues to blow off Boston because of the repercussions of that. Unreal. So thank you, Greg. And then a little cherry on top of all this flurry of activity during the holiday season, Greg was just interviewed by the Paris Herald. I love that. So congratulations to Greg and to all of East Bay Soul. The momentum continues for 2013. Greg just wrote to me and he said, I really feel good about this year. I said, I guess you do. There's no turning back now. This is his second wind. I love it. Another trumpeter of note, Christian Scott, New Orleans baby, who is the nephew of the jazz great alto sax man Donald Harrison. Christian Atunde, I want to get this name right. Atunde Ajua, that's what he wishes to be known as. Christian Atunde Ajua Scott on trumpet and Isadora, just beautiful. From yesterday you said tomorrow, and actually his grandfather used to say that because Christian and his twin brother didn't have their homework done on time, and they would tell their grandfather, oh, tomorrow. And then it came to be tomorrow, and the grandfather would say, yesterday you said tomorrow. Oh! So that stuck. Christian on trumpet, Matthew Stevens on guitar, Milton Fletcher on mesmerizing piano, Jem Williams on drums, and Chris Fun from our region, yay Chris, on bass. Just wonderful stuff. And Christian's going to have a new album out, I think, in the summer. We'll keep you posted about that. So listen for more of his whisper technique. That's his breath over creation that is particularly his. Let's do Terry Lynn Carrington, shall we? Oh, please, let's. I want to get something in from the Mosaic Project, because we need to hear more women on instrumentation. And Terry Lynn has been top of mind for me because my buddy Dwight Sills and Frank McComb are doing a project with Terry Lynn, and I hope we'll have really good news soon about that kind of little conglomeration, as it were. This is a Wistful from the Mosaic Project on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo! Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
Oh, bless your heart, George Duke. No Rhyme, No Reason from 1992 Snapshot. Congratulations to George by popular vote as of December last month. He was inducted into the Soul Music Hall of Fame at soulmusic.com. One of the many accolades that man has received through his life. If you are going to be on the Soul Train Cruise this year, you look out. I am so envious. George Duke and Terry Lynn Carrington and the Entourage from the Mosaic Project. Thank you so much for joining me today. Mike MacArthur, Jackie Ryan, thank you. In the upcoming weeks, get ready. There's going to be some great music ahead, and I am not joshing you. God bless you. We'll see you on Thursday on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.